Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Maybe Next Year. I'm your host, Corey Foss, with my co-host, Ethan Vober, here. This week, we're joined for the second time by our friend over here in Minneapolis, Mike Haas. Mike, thanks for stopping in and joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Just a quick reminder where to check us out at. Typically, your show's up about a half hour after we finish it here. It comes up first on Spotify. All you got to do is go ahead and search Maybe Next Year on Spotify. It'll pop up for you. You can catch up on any of our first five episodes too while you're there if you'd like to. Our plan here for tonight is we're going to talk a little bit about the Vikings-Packers game from Monday night and take a brief look at possible playoff spots or landing spots for both teams, who we think might be the best matchup or the worst matchup for either of them. And then a little bit of a look back at where the Vikings, how they've got to where they're at now and whether or not they need to win a playoff game here to be a success. Second segment, we're going to talk about the Twins a little bit, take a look at some of the moves that have happened over the last week and a half in the Major League free agent market, discuss a little bit if we think the Twins have missed their window of opportunity here and if there are any other options, legitimate options out there for them. Then we'll take a break and we'll come back and look at our favorite moments from the last 10 years as we wrap up the 2010s, our favorite Minnesota sports moments, and also our what we think are the five most Minnesota sport moments where there was either a letdown or a failure of some kind. Our fourth segment, we're going to take a look at, we're going to step outside the sporting world a little bit and take a look at, look back on some of our favorite movies and TV shows, just have a little fun there. And then finish up with a bold prediction, not just for this week, but instead for the next 10 years of Minnesota sports. So it's we're going to look way beyond what we typically do, and then we'll wrap up from there. All right. First up, the Vikings and Packers game from last Monday night, which was a 23-10 loss for the Vikings. It moves the Packers to 12-3, and with that, they clinch the NFC North. First time since 2016, I believe.
Yep.
The Vikings fall to 10-5 and have locked themselves in now to the sixth seed no matter what happens this week. So the game against Chicago is basically meaningless at this point. But whether Zimmer decides to play starters for a quarter or a half or to try and get them moving in the right direction, we'll see, I guess. The game itself for a Vikings fan was kind of was a really painful one to watch. It was not at any point really enjoyable, or the Vikings never played particularly well early on. They got a couple of quick turnovers, but other than that, on offense and defense, it was a pretty big letdown. They led somehow miraculously 10-9 at halftime after only having two first downs and 68 yards total. Cousins only threw for 39 yards in the first half. Both of their scores came off of turnovers where they had a short field inside the Packers 30. And then when it was all said and done, the Vikings had a whopping 139 yards total for the game and only seven first downs. Cousins was sacked five times. Za'Darius Smith had 3.5 himself. He was a stud to watch.
Truck.
Kind of the well talked about storyline is that Cousins now drops to 0-9 in Monday Night Football games. Questions abound about whether or not, Dalvin Cook being out is what was to blame for kind of the inconsistencies on offense. Alexander Mattison was also out, which left Mike Boone as the number one running back, which isn't always a great situation. He ran for 28 yards on 11 carries. I'll ask about the play calling a little bit with Kevin Stefanski, because I think most Vikings fans were pretty baffled by some of the calls that were made and the overall game plan. But I think one of the key stats looking at it, the Packers controlled the ball for 37.5 minutes out of the game, which is, leaving the Vikings at a little over 22 minutes. In a 60-minute game, that is a huge, huge difference. And eventually what broke the Vikings defense in the second half, just being on the field that many more, the Packers had 22 more plays on offense than the Vikings, which is a huge difference. Cousins ended 16 for 31 for 122 yards, a touchdown and an INT. And so we talked last episode 5 about whether or not we felt Cousins was becoming an elite quarterback. I think that question was answered in a little bit, that he's not there yet, even after playing well for the last half season. That was a really ugly showing. Not all for him, you know, not all his blame. He didn't have much protection all night, but I think a lot of that went to the play calling and the fact that what's worked for them all year with the play action, they did six times. They ran play action six times, which is
because his first interception on play action was season, wasn't it?
The one that he threw down the middle, was that his first one?
I think that was the first one. Some crazy stat, I think 2 weeks ago, came up.
Yeah.
You know, he had been crazy on play actions. And then, he ended up throwing that. I think that was his first interception off play action all year.
Yeah, I believe that because
And it was a terrible pass.
It was. And he was trying to do a little bit too much after all the struggles of the night. But and then Diggs was 0 for 1. As well, he threw that one. They tried to run the Philly special or whatever,
yeah.
And Cousins looked just like a great athlete as he laid out there for that one. But okay, so you know, Vikings fans obviously pretty discouraged by it after, you know, I think feeling okay going into it about the way they played recently. Now all those old feelings come back that, okay, here we go again. As we head towards the end of the season and towards the playoffs, not a lot of positive vibes going through Viking fandom. So, open it up to the Packer fan here. And what were your thoughts or takeaways from the game?
From the Green Bay aspect of it, Jones had a really good game again. And that was a big part of controlling the game was you have to go through Jones. And typically when he has, there was some stat over 100 yards, the Packers had won, I think, all but one. So when you get your rushing game going like that against a good Minnesota front, it's hard for Minnesota to stay in the game, especially when they had them 9 points and Green Bay wasn't capitalizing on anything in the red zone. I said to myself, I sent out a couple text messages, we're going to have to win this game 12-10 on field goals because we can't score. But you've seen as Minnesota got tired, the receivers for Green Bay made a couple key blocks, opened up a couple holes that maybe would have stopped at a 10-yard gain. He had the 55-yard touchdown, I think it was,
yep.
And he broke that open, and that was probably a lot of fatigue because they got worn down. From the Minnesota standpoint, I think Thielen didn't have a catch. I don't even know if he was thrown to the entire game.
I think he had four targets and didn't have a single
catch. Did he have four? I knew he didn't have a reception late or early in the fourth. Which you got to find, you know, he's a key guy. Diggs is a key guy. You know, that's when you don't have your running backs. Madison's a very good back still. But especially when Cook is out, you have to find a way to get the ball to your top two players. Your top two is not Kirk Cousins.
No.
But he has to be, if he wants to be elite and he wants to have people stop talking about that 0-for-9, and get into that category, then he's going to have to start finding ways to do it without having people carry him. He's going to have to be that guy to do it. And Aaron Rodgers didn't have a great game. He got, I think there was five sacks with 40 yards lost against Aaron Rodgers. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think the first half, the offense didn't capitalize. Green Bay did what they needed to do to shut him out in the second half and clinch the division. And even so, Green Bay still would have had to go and lose to Detroit for Minnesota to get it. I think overall, Minnesota's in the playoffs. They're still alive. It's not like any other year. Well, we're done now. It's, you know, there's still a lot to play for if you're Minnesota. So that was my thoughts on it.
I mean, I got the feeling watching that as the game went on and the play calling didn't change, it was just more or less like, are they really in? I mean, are they really making a valiant attempt to try and win this game? Or are they just the fact that they're in now, or are they, you know, holding back? I don't know if it was a winner in kind of thing, if whether Cook would have played or not, I'm not sure, but, or Madison for that matter, but you just never got the feeling that it was a do or die game for them, yeah. You know, and whether they were okay with the sixth seed, but, you know, so now that opens up things as we kind of look to the next stage. Game against Chicago doesn't matter this week. This week does matter greatly, though, for the Packers. And luckily they have Detroit. If they win, they have at least a bye. They have at least the number two seed. So you figure that's got to be the case that they have that. If they win and the 49ers lose to the Seahawks, which a week and a half ago would have looked like a lot better game, but now with who's out for the Seahawks, Carson and that it should be the 49ers game. But if the 49ers do lose, that would then put Green Bay as the number one seed, and you got to go through there. And it doesn't matter what kind of year, you know, people aren't buying the Packers yet outside of Green Bay. Lambeau's not a place, the fun place to go and play in January for anybody. It doesn't matter who it is. So I think that's big. You know, you really keep an eye on that Seattle 49ers game. So with the Vikings, really, they have only two possibilities. One is that if Green Bay loses, they would then match up with Green Bay in the 3-6 game. And if things kind of go as they probably will, if Green Bay wins, it beats Detroit, then it would appear that it's New Orleans, where the Vikings have to go to New Orleans. I think that's kind of the most realistic option at this point, or scenario at this point in time, which is not a good matchup for the Vikings at all.
No.
It's a very poor matchup. They you know, they're good at stopping the run, and they can put pressure on Cousins. And we've seen, you know, all year what happens when the pressure is put on him. The offensive line looked absolutely horrendous.
Looked terrible
on Monday. You know, and if he doesn't have time and they're stopping the run, and we've seen the Vikings secondary get picked off, you know, several times over the last, you know, 4 or 5 weeks, it could be a really bad matchup. And, you know, even though it's been a couple of years, they're still going to be talking about the, you know, the Minneapolis miracle and payback for that kind of stuff. And whether that's motivation, I don't think you shouldn't need any more motivation in a playoff game, but if it is, it is. So that's the Viking scenario. What would you hope to see, at least for the Packers? I know obviously to get a bye, but who would you like to see them possibly match up?
I don't know. I mean, I don't trust Green Bay really right now still. With Aaron Rodgers having a subpar year, I feel like, opposed to what he's been, he's not right now the elite quarterback. And you don't really know if Jones is going to show up or not, or if your receivers are going to block, or if we're going to have, you know, you kick 3 field goals in the first half, and you do that against maybe a different team besides Minnesota, and maybe you don't hold them to 10 points in the first half, you're probably done. You don't do that against San Francisco or New Orleans or, you know, anybody like that. I the best thing I could hope for is we get the one seed, we play in Lambeau, and that's it. And then I really don't care. I feel way more comfortable. But falling to that 3 seed, I guess, I don't want to play Minnesota. I really don't. In Lambeau or not, I don't want to play Minnesota again.
Yeah, because you got to figure, hopefully they learned to, they should know enough about each other now, obviously. But with a healthy Minnesota team, it's definitely the better matchup for the Vikings to go there as opposed to go to New Orleans. I think New Orleans is kind of – with the way what's happened to Seattle now and Green Bay, and even with the, you know, the 49ers had a couple tough ones too in the last 4 or 5 weeks. I think New Orleans is kind of the one place that nobody wants to go.
Yep.
I think definitely Green Bay would be an advantage if New Orleans had to go to Green Bay, you know, to play in that, and the weather and stuff there would, you know, slow them down, you'd think, a little bit, as opposed to inside on the turf. But
you're still playing Hall of Fame quarterback Drew Brees.
I
mean,
yeah.
And it's not like he hasn't gone to Green Bay at all. I mean, that's the thing, is you see a lot of good quarterbacks that have already weathered the storm in Lambeau too. So it's just, I don't know. It'll be an interesting playoff. I'm excited for it.
NFC is wide open.
Yeah.
It really is. And I think, you know, we'll see what happens with, if Philadelphia wins, they're in, you know, even with the year that they've had, you know, they would finish 9-7. I don't think that they're an easy out, you know, if they're healthy. Wentz has been playing quite a bit better the last few weeks as well. You know, so there isn't an easy in or easy out, I don't think, anywhere in those 6 spots. I think probably I would rather go to Dallas than go to Philadelphia, you know, at this point in time, at least. But it's up to, you know, I don't, Philadelphia, whether they win or not. Is what dictates that there. So whether it'll be them or Dallas, but yeah, so it'll be interesting to see it play out. It'll be interesting to see what the Vikings do on Sunday, whether or not they try to get back going a little bit in the right direction. But when it boils down to it, it almost, even though they didn't get a bye, they're not going to be one of the top 2 seeds. They kind of get a bye, you know, if they choose to use it that way to get everybody healthy. You know, I don't think you'll see Thielen out there. Probably not a whole lot of Diggs either. And then they've already ruled out, obviously, Cook. I don't know about Madison, whether they're going to try and get him going a little bit or keep him healthy. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out at least. And then, you know, when we come on for our next episode, we'll kind of have an idea of where everybody's going, or we will know where everybody's going and be able to preview that a little bit.
Yeah. I think you rest them. I think you just, you're happy you're in the playoffs and you give whoever you have to give 100%, opposed to, you know, somebody else getting hurt and then you go limping into the playoffs.
Yeah. So, Mike, I know you're not big into the Vikings, but do you have any thoughts on you know, what you see happening with them in the playoffs or where you'd like to see them go or not go?
Yeah, I don't really have any thoughts on that. I'm just hoping, I guess, not for a gigantic letdown like in the past. If they get to the second round, I think a lot of people would be happy based on kind of what the kind of daunting matchups look like.
Yeah,
potential in the first.
So is the last question to ask then, is the Vikings season a failure if they don't win a playoff game? Do we look back on this then and look at it, you know, as kind of a busted year, a wasted year? What do you think, Ethan?
I think for paying your quarterback $80 million, I mean, there's just two aspects to look at it. For the money that was put into the team, and given a lot of it was Kirk, was 10 wins enough losing in the first round? I don't know. Being a Minnesota fan, I think no. I think you have higher hopes. You can go. You're still working your way up. Avoid Monday Night Football. And I think this Minnesota team can get better. So I think it's just kind of, how do you look at it? If you're expecting a Super Bowl this year, no. I mean, yeah, it's a letdown. If you're kind of just playing to improve, like we've talked about with every Minnesota team, I think it's not. You got 10 wins. You're in the playoffs. I mean, there's a lot worse. You can be Detroit. You can be Chicago. You can be the Bengals. I mean, there's a lot of teams that you could be. So, no, I don't. I think overall, my personal opinions, no, it's not a letdown.
I you know, after 2 years ago in the NFC title game and having a shot there and then having a big letdown last year in Cousins' first year, you know, their lineup, their roster is too talented to be okay with a 10-win and out season, I think, you know, with the weapons they have on offense and the way they've looked during their better games. But they haven't beat the playoff teams. You know, they've kind of feasted on the lower end teams and having a little bit weaker schedule, and which is why when you look ahead to the playoffs and look at how Cousins has played against good teams, you don't have a whole lot of positive, you know, outlook towards it. But you know, what we've said about Cousins being 0-9 and not being able to win the big games and things like that, he's gonna have one more crack at it, at trying to end that, you know, that stigma that people have of him. You know, he'll have a first round playoff game. He's never won a playoff game before in his career, and so yeah, I guess we'll learn a little bit more about him. And
it's time to do it now. Yeah. I mean, this is the year.
Yeah, and you can't. You know, football is not a NFL is not a league where you can chalk it up to, well, maybe, you know, next year. No, when you have the opportunities, you got to take advantage of them, because there aren't a lot. Unless you're the Patriots, you're not making it every year, you know. Yeah. So it's just not an easy league with all the parity and things that there are with it. So all right,
how do Vikings fans feel about Zimmer? I mean, how much leeway are they giving that guy? It seems like everything is falling onto either Zimmer or Cousins. But what is Zimmer's kind of like? What's his approval rating kind of in Vikings fandom right now?
I think it's like it is in any other sports fandom when things aren't going as well as you believe they should be. And they haven't for a while now. You know, I know that they got to the NFC title game 2 years ago, but he's had what was supposed to be an improved roster from that, you know, upgrading quarterback, and hasn't been able to put it all together. And, you know, he's got a very abrasive personality. He's not particularly lovable, I don't think, but
did he flip someone off during the end of the game? I didn't read any articles, but I feel like I heard at some place on ESPN or something that post game, it was either refused to shake hands or he flipped someone off.
Oh, no, he had it was at the end of the game, and he just gave a really, really brief handshake, turned around and walked away with Green Bay's head coach.
LaFleur,
you know, so it was, people made more out of it than it was. Oh, yeah. I mean, he was just upset that they played a poor game, I think. And
well, that's fine. I heard that. I thought I'd read something that was more than that. But which obviously you don't get to be a professional head coach and flip anyone off.
No.
You're always under the spotlight. So, yeah, like you said, even stuff like that's going to get blown out of proportion. But
I think I don't know, the way that not just football but baseball and some of the other sports are going with the younger coaches, you know, with the new, whether it be looking at just different viewpoints, you know, look like L.A. and, you know, Chicago last year and some of those younger coaches, I think that sometimes is a hot button. You know, if things don't go well, maybe let's try somebody, you know, new up and comer, that kind of thing. And whether that'll happen, I think if they go and get blown out in the first round of the playoffs, it's definitely a possibility that Zimmer isn't around for another one. So, but you never know, you know, I know a lot of people have been high on Stefanski and whether he's a possible head coaching candidate, I don't know, but, it definitely will be something to be talked about if things don't go well in that first round game, which I think if they go to New Orleans, I think it's not going to go well. I don't see it going well. So, all right, so that'll wrap it up for the Vikings. We'll take a quick break here and we'll come on back and talk about the Twins a little bit. Welcome back to Maybe Next Year. In our second segment here, we're going to talk a little bit about the Minnesota Twins and what was another very uneventful week and a half since our last show. No major moves at all by the Twins, but that week and a half has seen some of those names continue to fall off of the board, particularly starting pitchers that a lot of Twins fans, I think, were very hopeful that would be targeted. Ryu, I think, who was probably the next name that most Twins fans were looking at, kind of in a surprise move, signed with Toronto, 4 years, $80 million, which, you know, whether he'd had some arm problems and things like that in the past, and whether that was something that turned the Twins off or whatever, we don't know if they made a sizable offer to him or not. But I don't think anybody, knowing how much money the Twins have to play with this year, that 4 years and $80 million would have broken them. And then also Dallas Keuchel and what was, I don't know if you would call him top tier, but probably that second tier that people were looking at, went off the board to the White Sox, which I think for Twins fans also was a little bit discouraging to see him go to a division rival who I think most fans would agree have had a very, you know, productive or active off season and maybe have even passed up where the Indians in that area where the Indians are at and whether they're the biggest threat to the Twins next year. It's definitely a possibility. And I'll ask you about that in a minute, Mike, too, but Keuchel went off the board for 3 years and $55.5 million. So that all being said, you know, names that are still out there, the pitching is free agent market is pretty much dry now. There isn't really any, big to mid level names still out there. I know that a lot of the talk has been, okay, well, maybe they're just biding their time waiting for some kind of trade. David Price being one of those names that keeps popping up, but I really don't know how realistic that is considering that they couldn't match, you know, $20 million a year offers to Ryu and to Keuchel, but they couldn't with Bumgarner either. Went to Arizona for 5 years and $85 million. Well, I think Twins were hoping that he was the number one target for them this offseason. David Price still has 3 years left and $32 million a season. And reports say that Boston not only wants to unload that salary, but they also want a prospect or two in return, which the Twins won't do. You know, the money issue is big enough as it is, but they're not going to unload any prospects for him. And then the other name out there for possible big trade would be Noah Syndergaard from the Mets. So, Mike, what do you think? Do you think that they've missed their window completely now? Are there any other options out there for them? What do you see?
Yeah, it's definitely disappointing that they weren't able to get one of those guys. I'm curious to know what the front office is kind of thinking. I'm not putting this at all on ownership's shoulders. I have this like reaction to people who just rip the poll ads instinctually all the time, and I think they're right for the most part, but I also think it's just annoying, and it's not fun analysis. I think all owners in sports get ripped for not spending more money. Just about, you know, there's the outliers like Mike Ilitch of Detroit once in a while who puts his personal fortune into the team. But for the most part, owners are not spending their personal cash on roster construction, and they're looking to make a profit, and that's how they got rich in the first place, enough to buy a team. So I'm not ripping on the poll ads like every single day, but I am wondering what the heck the front office is kind of thinking. And Falvey and Levine, I have like a theory that's germinating about like their kind of small market mindedness. Falvey came from Cleveland and Levine came from Texas Rangers. And, you know, neither of those teams are known for spending money. So maybe they're just not good at kind of spending dough. And that was a criticism of Terry Ryan as well, is that he was so used to pinching pennies in the 90s that when the Twins finally had larger revenue streams and could push towards the middle of the pack in terms of payroll, that he just didn't know how to do it. So I wonder if that's kind of a similar thing with Valdi and Levine, is that they know that they have money to play with, but they don't really know how to compete for free agents, and they are a little bit gun shy about giving people like Ryu and Keuchel, you know, guys who are towards the tail end of their careers, longer term contracts, when they know that, you know, in all likelihood they're not going to be that productive at the end. But I hope that if they're smarter than that they can see that this is a window that the Twins have that's wide open right now, that even if they're not productive in 4 years, 3 or 4 years, that they're going to be productive in 2020 and really help the team. So yeah, it's super disappointing to not get anybody at all and just feel like you're sitting on the sidelines again like we do every year. But I think, yeah, I really think they've got to do something because it's just getting ridiculous. I mean, I'm not sure about David Price either. I was going to look him up and see what his like trade value was, because when you said how much money he's supposed to be owed over the next
32 million a year.
Yeah, that's insane. So, okay. So,
which is only $4 million less a year than Gerrit Cole is now getting.
So here's something that's really, and he's 33 years old too, which is crazy. So there's this really cool website that I'd encourage you guys to check out, and anybody who's listening, called baseballtradevalues.com. And what these guys have done, they've taken a really like smart data heavy approach to kind of trying to figure out what the value of like prospects and major leaguers are, and putting together all the variables into kind of one figure. And so what you can do is you can add up a bunch of different guys and then do a trade simulator with another team and then see how like the money balances out, and you can even like send money and stuff. So it's kind of like video game-esque a little bit, where you can validate these trades. And it's kind of cool because a lot of times in our kind of corner of sports fandom is that we know a lot about what's going on with our favorite team and stuff, but we might not know how to value another player on a different team. So we'll overvalue our own player and say like, oh, I would never trade Eddie Rosario for Caleb Smith or something like that. Then a fan of another team would say, well, I would never trade our guy for that guy either. So this is a good way to kind of check that. Anyway, I just looked up David Price's trade value, and his trade value right now is negative 60. Negative 60 is like probably one of the lowest trade values that's possible on here. And what that means is that nobody would take on that money. It's just insane. So as a little bit of context, like the top trade value for the Twins right now is Max Kepler, because he's 26 and because he signed that team friendly extension. So he's under control for a few years at a good salary. So he's at 85. So
wow.
David Price is at negative 60. It's just insane. The other name you mentioned was
Noah Syndergaard.
Noah Syndergaard. Yeah. So I looked up him too. He is something like 90. 77. So that's his trade value right now. So looking at the Twins roster, Jorge Polanco is at 81. So you'd be looking at like a one for one practically, mm-hmm, with Jorge Polanco if you wanted to do a one for one. And then that
would never happen.
which would never happen because, yeah, exactly, because Syndergaard's only under contract for another couple of years. And so I just don't think that's going to happen at all. I think the name I mentioned earlier, Caleb Smith, who's like a little bit on the older side and totally unproven for the Marlins, and his trade value is like 10 or something like that. But he's got some gas that's in the tank, and he's got some skills that scouts and analysts kind of drool over about with strikeouts and, you know, elite pitches and things like that. So he could be kind of a Wes Johnson type project where he, you know, they spy somebody and they pluck them from a organization and they turn him into a really good pitcher. So, you know, there are probably some opportunities out there like that. And maybe that, even though we haven't really seen that, I guess, in the past from this front office in terms of trading, maybe they're better at just dealing with other front offices better than they're dealing with free agents and their agents. So who knows? We'll just have to see. It would be crazy if they did nothing.
Well, the other big name that it keeps coming up over and over again, and it sounded like it actually last week that the Twins were one of two teams only, the Twins and Nationals, that were offering Josh Donaldson a 4-year contract. He's 34, but it would be a huge, huge get for the Twins, a huge get, you know, to put his bat in the middle of that lineup on either side of Cruz and Sano, and then have him playing third base where he's just phenomenal over there, and being able to move Sano to first. I think that would be a massive move, and I think most Twins fans would be pretty stoked about that. Do you think adding a big name offensive player like that and not getting to a pitcher, do you think that would maybe quell the angry Twins world right now fandom? And do you think it would be a good move?
Yeah, it would definitely smooth things over for Twins fandom, and people would hop on board the Donaldson train because he's a fun player to watch. And he's like outspoken and he's kind of crazy. So he'd be super fun to have in the fold, but yeah, I'm not sure how great it would. I'm not sure how good of a move from a baseball standpoint that would make it, because then you got Sano stuck over at first base, and that kind of log jams up everything. Because I know when I was first on this program a while back, we kind of talked about how many outfielders and first baseman types that the Twins have in the minors, and so if they want to block up all that immediately, that would be interesting. I'm not sure if that's something that they want to do long term, but Donaldson, I would be totally on board with that.
Yeah. All right. Well, the last question then we'll ask in the baseball section here is about the White Sox, because I think it is something that we've noted a couple times and worth asking your opinion on. But the White Sox have had a crazy offseason. For as inactive as the Twins have been, they've been equally active. They've signed so far the names that they've signed, either in free agency or given an extension to. They got Gio Gonzalez, left-handed pitcher, Edwin Encarnacion, who kills the Twins, Dallas Keuchel, like we just said, James McCann. They re-upped Jose Abreu, who also is another one that has really hurt the Twins over the last few years, and Grandal as well. And so, like I said, they've been very active, and a lot of the discussion has been about whether or not they've closed the gap between, you know, the 101 win Twins and where they were at last year. Do you remember? I don't know if they won 72 games last year. I think it was. And looking at numbers and things like that, I know that one of the big stats or terms out there now is WAR, wins above replacement, and what that puts them at compared to the Twins. Just to give you kind of, maybe if you don't understand completely, Twins WAR last year was 54.9, so wins above replacement based on their position players, their starting pitchers, and their bullpen. Right now, their WAR is at 39.4, and so they see them dropping off by about 15 wins at this point in time. At least those numbers do. The White Sox WAR is now up to 36.1, so just about three behind the Twins. And I know there's still some offseason to go, and the Twins do have quite a bit of money still to play with. Do you think that the White Sox have closed the gap as close to, you know, 5-10 games between them and the Twins.
Yeah, so I was remembering that the WAR model is kind of like you base a zero WAR team would win about 40 games. So if you want to add 40 wins to what you just said, so what was it, 36 games for the
White Sox?
For the White Sox, yeah. So that would be what, 76 wins or so.
If that's where you're starting at a zero with 40 wins, yeah.
Yeah. So the numbers that I was looking at were. Had them around projected for around like 81, 82 wins. So that's a 500 season. And the Twins were around 90. And to me, that feels way more correct. I still don't see the White Sox as like a major contender. I know they get to beat up on the Royals and the Tigers a lot. And so maybe that pushes them up a little bit, but I don't see them as like a serious, serious contender to win over 90 games yet. They could still have some moves in the tank, I guess, but the Twins could still have some moves in the tank as well. I guess we'll have to see. I really think the White Sox are going to be scarier maybe in the second half and maybe in 2021 when they get some of their pitching back, like Kopech and, you know, continuing to get strides from, some of their guys like Lewis Robert and some of their prospects, but I don't know. They don't have a great reputation as like in their player development, especially on the pitching side. So I'm not sure if I'm going to take them seriously in 2020 yet. Even though I do like the players that they got. I mean, I would have loved to see the Twins, you know, get somebody like a combination of Keuchel and. Grandal is a really good pitch framer and receiver and defensive catcher, as well as hitting really well, and he's an exciting player to and so to pair him with Keuchel, who's a ground ball specialist, and you know, paint is really a control artist. To pair those two together, it'll be I don't want to say fun to watch since I'm a Twins fan, but it'll be interesting, and it's kind of fun to see them put that together.
Yeah, I think that I should have written down where exactly the site this was on, but they had win projections as they stand right now, and it had the Twins at 93, the Indians at 92, and the White Sox at I think 84, and
okay.
That and leading those numbers, that kind of felt like maybe that was in the right ballpark. Whether it's going to be that close between, you know, the Twins and the Indians, I think a lot of it will have to do with where. The Indians are out around the trade deadline because they are nearing that decision point, you know, with Lindor and a couple other guys. So, but they have the pitching, you know, whereas the Twins don't have the deep starting pitching. That's one thing that they do have even after who they just unload.
God, I looked at it.
Who the Indians just unload? What starting pitcher?
Kluber.
Yeah. Even with him.
Yeah.
Even with him
and
out.
They were talking about unloading guys like Clevenger and Lindor too. So I don't know. Nobody really knows what they're doing. I mean, talk about Twins fans being angry at their ownership. Like Indians fans are just livid at theirs because they seem intent on just not competing. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah. And the AL Central is you can't check out when you're that close as I think they are to really still competing. So yeah, that would be frustrating as well as an Indians fan. So, all right. I guess, well, really the only other question I had, I think you kind of answered in passing, and that is, has ownership and the front office let down Twins fans after what we experienced last year and knowing what it was probably going to take to be able to compete again? I mean, are Twins fans rightfully angry right now?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, again, I reflexively kind of defend the Twins because I think a lot of times when I see people just ripping on the Pollads and just tearing apart the Twins and like, you know, they used to rip on Maurer, rip the crap out of Maurer. It just seemed like that was an uninformed segment of the Twins, of Twins fandom, and I just didn't care for that. But that's the thing, like, they're not wrong, I don't think. They're not wrong to necessarily rip on Maurer because he probably could have hit for more power. They're not wrong to rip on the Pollads because they should be spending money because all rich people in America should spend more money on their employees. So, you know, it's like one of those things. But at the same time, like I want to strive to understand what the front office is doing first before I start ripping on them. So that's why I'm asking those questions about what do they see aging curve for somebody like Keuchel, and why do they not see that as value, or what are they thinking with regards to their negotiation tactics with some of these free agents?
Yeah, I think it would be nice to see, you know, behind the curtain and what kind of conversations go on there, but we won't.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. It's a weird thing because I trust the front office, but I'm totally frustrated at them too. And I want the Poleds to spend more money, but I understand if they don't. So I'm definitely like willing to see all sides of this, I feel like. But it is annoying because the front office themselves, I think it was Dad Levine last year at this time, said something like, we've got a high variability roster. A lot of things could break right and a lot of things could break wrong. So we're not exactly sure how far cracked open our window of contention is right now. And then the Twins went out and won over 100 games. And mm-hmm. So now it seems like the window is wide open and they're not doing it. So it's kind of definitely frustrating to see them sit out on the sidelines.
Yeah, and we just talked about window of opportunity in the NFL too. I think the window of opportunity is even, especially for small market teams, you know, I think we see that too and say, wow, we're this, you know, we're 100 wins, we're this close from really making a really serious run, even though I think it's going to be hard to compete with the Yankees starting rotation and offense now. But I think most average fan, even the average fan, would say that window is there and it's probably time to
do something. What we talked about last week was that a couple weeks ago, we were talking about how the Twins are well thought of in the kind of progressive baseball community, and a lot of their coaches and front office members are getting poached and onto other teams, and the Twins definitely have kind of a reputation, and they've got a little bit of a head start on some of you know, those extra 1 or 2% edges on some other teams. But the thing about those edges is they really only last 1 or 2 years until your guys start getting picked off, and that's already happening right now. And the other teams see what you're doing and they start doing the same things. And so that's the other window part of this, that the other teams are going to catch up in terms of player development and smart coaching and kind of like all the analytics stuff. So we'll see what happens.
It's like any other professional league. It's a copycat league. You know, you do something, you know, new and well, and people catch on pretty quick. So, all right. That'll wrap everything up here for the Twins, and we'll take a quick break and come on back with our top moments of Minnesota sports the last 10 years. Welcome back. We are in section three here, segment three. We're going to talk about our top moments, our top favorite moments from the past 10 years in Minnesota sports, and then we'll kind of flip on that and give what we think are some of the most significant Minnesota sports moments, letdowns over the last decade as well. So I'll start off here a little bit. My favorite moments are mostly being, you know, the Twins fan that I am, most of them are Twins related, even though it wasn't necessarily in terms of championships a great decade for the Twins, but there were definitely some significant moments that were a lot of fun. I think it all should start with the opening of Target Field. It opened on April 12th of 2010, and the Twins, until this last year, that had their best year of the decade that year. They won 94 games in an AL Central title. There was a lot of good moments from that season. My favorite, however, was I got to go to the first ever preseason game on March 27th against the Cardinals, which was a lot of fun. It was very cold, but it was a lot of fun, a cool atmosphere. And there wasn't many people in the seats because everybody was walking around checking out the new stadium. But and also, side note, Jock Jones was with the team in spring training that year. And so they brought him with and he got to play right field. And I remember yelling at him and everybody being happy to see him again, although he wouldn't stick around. Yeah. He didn't make it.
I totally forgot about that.
Yeah, he didn't make the opening day roster, but it was still fun to see him out there. But my favorite moment from that season in game season was, and Mike, I'm sure you probably remember this, it was in August and the Twins and the White Sox were in a really heated race. And Jim Thome in his one big year there was, it was late in the game. And I don't know if it was, I think it was tied or they were, the Twins were down by a run or two and there was runners on, and lefty Matt Thornton came in and threw a pitch high and tight to Jim Thome, and he turned on and absolutely crushed one to right field, and Twins won that game, and the race was kind of over after that. That was probably my favorite Target Field memory from that first year. Other moments, kind of looking chronologically, with the Twins and Target Field, you know, the years were really bad. 11, 12, 13 were bad years. In 14, Target Field hosted the All-Star game. And I'm sure you remember this too, Mike. The AL won, and Glenn Perkins came in and got the save in the last inning, and throw into his catcher, Kurt Suzuki. And that was kind of a cool moment. Once again, those kind of lean years there in the early part of the decade. In 2015, my favorite all-time Twin came back for 1 year. Torrey Hunter returned. And the Twins went on a really surprising run that year. After losing 92 games the year before, they went 83-79 and weren't eliminated until the second to last day from the wild card. And so that was a fun year, you know, after the kind of drudgery of the previous ones, to have a team that was in contention, you know, thanks to that second wild card being added. And then probably my favorite Twins moment, and probably maybe just because it's so recent in my mind, and we had mentioned this briefly, I think, the last time you were on, was Miguel Sano's grand slam in Cleveland this year. You know, in the middle of that really, really heated race and going there and knowing they needed to win a couple to put any kind of distance, and Sano coming up in it was the eighth inning, I believe. It was the eighth inning. And just absolutely crushing a grand slam to put them to cap off a doubleheader sweep that day. And that was kind of the end of the race there too. So those are my favorite Twins moments. I think looking at, if you're going to look at any of the other sports, obviously the Minneapolis Miracle. I think if you're a Vikings fan in particular, that's probably what you will remember as the high point of the last decade. You know, and I think looking back on it and watching it and going through that experience or whatever, the game was over and, you know, it was another Minnesota Vikings failure and you're ready to turn the TV off. And then absolutely out of nowhere, you know, the pass comes down and I just remember it being kind of a surreal scene, you know, wondering if what was happening was actually happening, whether you were seeing it right and waiting for a flag to come out or something, you know, and just that whole, you know, the rest of that night and that week and the excitement and all the things that went into it and people thinking, well, maybe it was their year and obviously one of the failure moments, and the next part will be what happened the next week. But yeah, that was definitely, I think, probably the coolest Vikings moment. The Timberwolves, who haven't had really any positive moments for the last 20 years, did have a you know, one kind of cool memory in 18 when they finally made the playoffs for the first time in 14 years. It had been had a big game three, their first game, home game, playoff game in 14 years. Beat the number one seeded Rockets 121-105. And it wasn't, I don't think anybody had any preconceived notions that the Timberwolves were going to win that series, but it was a fun atmosphere and kind of cool to see. And I think probably if you're looking at it as a whole, some of the really positive things that happened in Minnesota sports, you can't go without mentioning all the new stadiums that have opened in the last 10 years in Minnesota, more than any other market. You know, Target Field opening in 2010, the Saints' new field opening a couple of years ago, CHS, which is a beautiful field downtown St. Paul. U.S. Bank opening 3 years ago. 3 years ago now?
Yeah.
3 years ago? 4 years ago? Alliance Field. Am I saying that right? The United Stadium? Is it Alliance? Their new stadium is a pretty cool one too, even if you're not a huge soccer fan.
The Loons?
Yeah, is it Allianz?
Yeah, that's Allianz, yeah.
Allianz, there we go.
Yeah.
Target Center was completely redone, $200 million, $250 million, something like that, and it's a completely different place than what I remember growing up in the kind of the hole that it was, just a dark hole. And you know, we grew up and it seemed like every single team and every sport, everything was played at the Metrodome. And I know you love the Metrodome as much as I did. But to see, you know, all these teams now playing in these new stadiums and knowing that they're going to be there for a while, not having to deal with a lot of the conversations and fears that we did when we were kids, about this team leaving and that team leaving, knowing that they're there is pretty cool. So I think that was a big positive development over the last 10 years. And then also, you know, the Gophers Stadium opened, I think, in 9 TCF. So it was a big decade for sports teams that way. So those are some of my favorites. Mike, what are some of the things that you've enjoyed over the last 10 years?
Yeah, you basically hit on those. The All-Star game in 2014 was really cool. I remember biking down to the parade. They had rolled out a literal red carpet for like a mile that went down Nicollet Mall and over to Target Field. And they had all the players in their brand new Chevy trucks, big Chevy MLB sponsor, you know, and they were all the All-Stars were throwing out balls to kids and stuff. So that was really cool. And then you mentioned all the cool stuff that was happening in 2010 with the opening of the stadium. I was there for all that. I was there for the Tomey game. And I remember Thornton was an All-Star that year, and it was a lefty on lefty matchup. And I was just thinking, well, that's not who you want to see in the game right now against Tomey, even though it's Tomey and he was having a great year. And then he launched that one off the foul pole, or off the flagpole. And it was just incredible. And the other thing I remember about that is the I think they were wearing their cream colored uniforms, which they brought back just for that season. For the first time that season, and they retired them last season, but Tomey looked great in that, and those looked great in the grass stains and everything. So that was a ton of fun too. Yeah, that's pretty much all I got. I would also mention Jack Jones follows me on Instagram and he's and he likes some of my posts. So that was funny. I just barely remembered that Jock Jones got like a standing ovation.
Yeah,
it was technically like a spring training game still, so he was with the team in spring training and then didn't make it. I think like Jason Bartlett or somebody was with the team at that point too. Remember that?
There's some other
ghost from the Twins past.
They did, and they brought him up just for that. Just they knew that they weren't going to make the opening day roster, but they brought him up for that. I mean, there was people had signs out in the outfield for Jock Jones, and I remember screaming at him. And I mean, it was fun.
So that was cool.
All right. Well, we're going to go to the most Minnesota sports moments. You know, this being maybe next year, the title of our podcast, some of those things that happened over the past 10 years that were very Minnesota sports. And, Ethan's excited for this and he's got some of his top moments there for that category.
So opening up, I just want to throw a stat out there. Minnesota professional sports, which doesn't count the WNBA, which is the Wild, T-Wolves, Twins, Vikings, and United, which is a soccer team. Postseason in 10 years, 18-45, which sort of brings my heart joy, but not so much for you guys. The honorable mention, just because it was during the 09 season, it happened in 2010, was the NFC title game against the Saints. AP fumbles 6 times. Brett Favre throws an interception late. Bounty gate. You know, that whole thing. Minnesota fans were quick to turn on Brett Favre during that, even though I had many arguments that you can't fumble 6 times and win a game. My number 5 would be the finish this year to the Gophers season, just because the hype was so high. Kind of came out of nowhere. You know, they talked, we're going to win the Big Ten, we're going to win the Rose Bowl, and then kind of just didn't happen. And to me, that, you know, maybe not so much of a disappointment, but I feel like the hype kind of that we got behind sort of made it a disappointment.
So like the Wisconsin game, you mean?
Yeah. Number 4 would be the 2017 Wild set franchise points record and then losing the first round.
Yeah, that's right. I didn't have that one down, but I was thinking about that.
Number 3, 2016, Walsh shanks 27-yard field goal, losing the first round to the Seahawks.
Gosh, I didn't have that one either.
Number 2 is a co. 2010-2019, Twins win the division. 2019 had 101 wins. Both years lose 3-0 to the Yanks first round. Or actually, one of them, I think 2010 wasn't the first round.
Yeah, it was.
Was it?
Yep.
Yeah.
And then my number 1, 2017 Eagles crush Minnesota in the NFC title game a week after the Minnesota Miracle, which to me, whether you're a high school athlete or college or anything, if things sort of just happen like that. And you're like, it's going to be us now. This is our sign that we're going to make a run. This is our year. We weren't supposed to be here. And then they turn around and the toilet gets flushed on them. Mm-hmm. And I think that, to me, if I was a Minnesota fan, would have been probably the biggest letdown in the last 10 years.
Yeah, that's funny. You mentioned a couple that I hadn't written down, but had thought about a little bit too. I'll double up on a couple of the, you know, looking at the Saints Vikings game, I definitely agree about the, you know, Peterson fumbling the ball and people not remembering that. You know, he fumbled one right on the goal line at the end of the first half that really would have probably put it out of reach too. You know, and then to lose in overtime and then to add insult to injury, the next year they changed the overtime rules just because of that, because of the Vikings game. One year too late. But I just remember like that whole thing playing out like it was yesterday, you know, where they were marching down the field, you know, with 2 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. And I just remember turning and looking at my wife and saying, oh my gosh, they're going to do it. The Vikings are going to go to the, you know, and I'm being a Minnesota sports fan, you never say anything like that, you know, and whatever, throwing across your body, throwing the pick to the middle field, people can be mad at Favre forever for that. But there was a lot of other things that went into that. And I knew as soon as, you know, the pick, I looked and I said, they're going to lose in the first possession of overtime. As soon as that happened, just like when I was a ninth grader and Gary Anderson lined up for the field goal against the Falcons, and I said, he's going to miss this. You know, just, there's just that kind of that Minnesota sports mindset that you have. So looking at chronologically then, I guess, if you're going to go that way, you know, you'd mentioned the Twins losing in 2010. To the Yankees. The Twins have not won a playoff game. I was going to look at what the number, they didn't win a single playoff game in the decade. The one that I was, and I think maybe it wasn't quite as painful because we didn't have as many expectations, but when they out of nowhere in 17 got that second wild card spot and went to Yankee Stadium and scored three runs in the first inning with two home runs, Dozier had one to lead off, and then who was it? Rosario had one too, Mike?
Yeah, I don't remember. I just remember what happened next.
So they were up 3-0, and I'm getting text messages and things like that about, oh my gosh, the Twins are finally going to beat the Yankees. It was the first inning, you know, and I just remember thinking, no, that's three runs is not, you know, they knocked out Severino with only, he only got one out, and they had runners on and couldn't get him in. And then Irving Santana, who had kind of, he'd had a great year and been the stud all along, just imploded and didn't make it out of the, only got through two innings. And they lose 8-4. And that was a tough one because you thought, you know, going into that, if there was a year to do it when there wasn't as high of expectations, that would have been it. You know, so that was difficult. And I mean, if you're looking at Twins failures in the decade when there were higher expectations, nothing, there's no better example than last year, you know, winning 101 games and not getting, I mean, they weren't even in the first two games, it seemed, it felt at least, you know, game three at home was a little bit better game, but once again, they blew a lot of chances. So that was definitely one of the, it felt different. It felt different than 2010 and 2017, where it was just a complete gut punch. I actually had that stat too, but I took the United out of it, where the Wolves, the Wild, the Twins, the Vikings were 8-44 in the postseason in a decade. That's, I mean, I don't know how that doesn't get talked about more, because that's insane. Those kind of numbers are absolutely insane. Then the biggest Wolves moment of the decade, I thought, and maybe you remember this, maybe you don't, but Jimmy Butler, you know, after who I never liked, even when he brought into the playoffs that year, then went out and demanded a trade in preseason and sat out the preseason game saying that he was sick or whatever it was. And then randomly showed up to a practice at the facility in Minneapolis and absolutely went bonkers, like just absolutely lost his mind and was shouting at players and shouting at the front office. He shouted at the general manager that after he scored a point or a basket or whatever, that you blank and need me, you can't win without me. And other players were just absolutely speechless. And he went and ripped on Kat and all kinds of, it absolutely imploded. You know, and then gave an interview to ESPN right after and just was nasty. And after that, luckily was traded. Thankfully was traded. But that was such a Wolves thing to happen, you know, after they made the playoffs for the first time in 14 years. And then to have that happen, it was kind of surreal to watch. And then the last one is that Vikings-Eagles game that you mentioned. Because it was like that. It was after that Minneapolis miracle where people looked around and said, oh my gosh, is this actually, are they legitimate now? Is this the sign that this is something special is going to happen? You know, and I just remember being really, the skull chant was everywhere. You know, everybody was doing it, and the teams were doing it in Minnesota, and they had all kinds of videos of people doing the skull chant. And that was really annoying. I've never really gotten behind it because of that, because I did find it really obnoxious at times. But yeah, they scored right away. First possession went up 7-0, and then 38 unanswered points by the Eagles, and that was it. You know, and they have not recovered from that, even though they, you know, head into the playoffs this year. Their defense has not ever been the same and recovered from that. So, yeah, those are the for me, the most Minnesota moments. Mike, do you have any of those?
Yeah, you guys pretty much covered everything. I mean, the bookended sweeps at the hands of the Yankees pretty much says it all for my Twins fandom. I mean, there's tons of great moments in between, but that's a legacy right now of the Twins in the playoffs. So, but just to touch on the Minneapolis Miracle versus what happened against the Eagles really quick. Do you guys think that, like, that feeling carries forward in terms of, like, oh my God, maybe we can do this and we can get over the hump just from that one insane success in the Minneapolis Miracle, that, like, that carries them forward? And because it seems like people still have a smile on their face just from that one play, despite that it led to the, you know, a horrible letdown the next week.
Well, I just think it, because stuff like that doesn't happen. I mean, yeah, for not just Vikings fans and Minnesota sports fans, I think it was just something that was, you know, that week in between that game and the NFC title game was just a crazy, yeah, you know, odd week where people just looked around at each other and was, is this real life? You know, did that really take place? And things like
and
that.
And they were setting up all the pylons for the Super Bowl in Minneapolis at that point too.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of stuff happening. It kind of occurs to me though that it's kind of like you know, we're in Major League and like Little Big League, and a lot of the sports movies in the 80s and 90s, they wouldn't, the ultimate game wasn't like the World Series or the Super Bowl or anything like that. It was like the lead up. It was like the American League Championship Series or something like that.
Yeah.
And it ended on like that high note. And I feel like that's a lot of Vikings fans just remember that one high note. And no matter what happened the following week, like nothing, that was like the pinnacle of the season. And it's still like a great accomplishment and great memory for a lot of people.
Yeah. And it should be, I guess. I don't know. It'll always be there. It'll always be one of the most, you know, crazy endings in NFL history, not just for Vikings fans, but
yeah, there's no walk-offs usually in the NFL. No. So yeah, it's crazy.
Not like that. All right. Now that we've looked at the good and the bad, we'll take a quick break and we'll come back with our off sports topic, our favorite movies and TV shows of the past 10 years. Welcome back to Maybe Next Year. Our next segment here, we're going to do something a little, for the first time, kind of step outside the sports world. And since it's the end of the decade and there's all kinds of crazy lists out there now about the last 10 years, I figured we'd maybe do a fun one of our own too, and talk about our favorite movies and TV shows of the past. I tried to say, hey, let's come up with five of this or five of that, and that wasn't happening for me in my list at least. So Ethan, I'll let you kind of, we'll cover movies here first, and why don't you give us some of your favorites.
So my movies, I don't also sit down and watch a whole lot of them, mainly because I'm a busy guy. But my five, number five is Inception. 2010 came out, blew everybody's minds. I remember it was probably one of the last movies I watched in theater. And popcorn prices and movie ticket prices remind me why I don't do that. Number four is Get Out. It's fairly recent, 2017. Jordan Peele directed it, kind of a movie about racism and stuff. Number three, Central Intelligence with Dwayne Johnson and Kevin Hart, which is just a pair. They've came out with a lot of movies since then, and it's just all been gold. Number two is Pain and Gain with Marky Mark and The Rock, which is a great movie. In general. And then I have a tie for number one, and it's actually Toy Story 3 and Toy Story 4, which came out 2010, 2019. Both still the greatest movies. Toy Story is the best movie franchise there ever is. Don't talk about Star Wars. Don't talk about whatever else. It's Toy Story.
There are no Star Wars in my list.
Harry Potter, any of it.
No. Yeah, I did. I think my kids would probably come close to agreeing with you about the Toy Story thing. All right. I'm just going to rattle off mine here. I got, and mine are being a, you know, love and history. A lot of them have to do that. Maybe if you're not a history nerd, you wouldn't enjoy quite as much, but my favorite might be Dunkirk from 2017. The World War II movie about the Allies trying to escape the France ahead of the Germans. It's just an absolutely, the story itself is absolutely incredible and one that doesn't get talked about enough in history. So it was really cool to see that depicted, and Christopher Nolan did it. You know, the guy who did the Dark Knight trilogy, which is phenomenal as well. Then I have Hell or High Water in 2016. Movie about two brothers robbing a banks to try and pay off their mortgage. Pretty incredible movie. Darkest Hour, which is about Winston Churchill and him trying to get England to survive Germany's attacks and their movements when it looked like it was probably lost for them in World War II. Really incredible story about him and what he did. Lincoln from 2012, a movie that I show in class every year because it is amazing. It just talks about the last couple of months of Lincoln's life where he tried to get the 13th Amendment passed, abolishing slavery before the end of the war. An incredible story. 12 Years a Slave as well, a true story about Solomon Northrop, a free black man in the North that is kidnapped and sold into slavery in the South, and his 12 years there before he ultimately escapes. Then probably A Quiet Place from 2018. Jim from The Office did an amazing movie with him and his wife. Emily Blunt, is that her name?
Yeah, I think so.
Emily Blunt. Probably my favorite horror movie was It Follows. I don't know if you guys have seen that about, well, I guess there's not really appropriate way to explain it, but it's a great movie. If you get a chance, check it out. War for the Planet of the Apes, the last of the Planet of the Apes movies. I enjoyed all of them, but the last one was incredible. I'm and my kids are big Harry Potter fans. I know Ethan doesn't like that, but the last one of that was actually 2011, The Deathly Hallows Part 2, which was absolutely phenomenal. I thought that it was a great wrap up, whether you like the books or not. So that's my list. Oh, Social Network I threw in there too from 2010, about Zuckerberg and the founding of Facebook, which, you know, if you're around our age, you know, you were in college when that came out, so it was pretty significant time. So that's what I have. And then my honorable mentions: Get Out, Gone Girl, Logan, I thought was the best superhero movie, if you want to call it that, of the decade. Wolf of Wall Street, I forgot that was in the 2010s too, 2013. Dark Knight Rises was the only one of those three that was in the 2010s. The Nice Guys, one of my favorite funny movies. The Conspirator, another one that I show in class about the assassination of Abraham Lincoln and those that were charged with conspiring to kill him. Cabin of the Woods, probably my next favorite horror movie. And then The Rider, which I don't know if probably no one outside of South Dakota had seen, but an amazing story based on a true story from some folks around West River.
Don't get engaged to someone that doesn't like horror movies, because it's completely shut my horror movie genre out. I just tried fighting for it last night. Couldn't do it. I haven't seen hardly any since then.
Mike, what about you? Any movies?
I'm definitely going to remember this decade as the decade that my the remaining shards of my attention span had been completely torn to tatters, so I can't really sit through very many movies anymore because there's so much other distractions and stuff going on. But I enjoyed Get Out. The only movies that I saw in the theater, I think, this decade were the Star Wars movies. But yeah, Inception was good. Yeah, that's pretty much it. I've listened to appropriately for our medium right now. I've been listening to tons of podcasts instead of watching movies.
Yeah, and that's all right.
Yeah.
Yep. And you got kids now too, and your movie selection narrows a little bit when you got young ones around too.
That's for sure. But we just got Disney Plus, so we're trying to wade into some of the classics there and things like that.
All right. TV shows. Before we go, Mike, you got any TV shows from the last 10 years?
I'm sure you guys are going to talk about some of the heavier ones like Breaking Bad and that kind of thing. So I just wanted to mention before I got a cut out here, one of the lighter ones that I've enjoyed and I just put on with my wife whenever we don't know what to watch is Bob's Burgers. It's just it's a great show because it's just so light and it's not overdone and it's not icky humor and it's not like a bunch of pop culture references. It's basically like taking animation shows like back to the pre-Simpsons days because the Simpsons obviously I love, but they changed everything and like birthed Family Guy and made, you know, crass humor. But this is Bob's Burgers is just about a family who likes each other and sticks up for each other and they're funny and they can be crass too, but it's very fun. So that's all I got.
I was trying to come up with rules for our for our list or whatever, and I thought, well, okay, yeah, let's do shows where only the majority of the show was in the 2010s, you know, and that took out right away my favorite show, The Office, because the majority of it ended in 12, but it started in 5, so that wouldn't have qualified. 30 Rock was the other one, and I thought, Mike, you might mention that too, but that was the majority of that ended in 13.
I love 30 Rock, yeah, for sure.
And then you got It's Always Sunny too, and that's been on for a long time, but taking those ones out, I would say I had number 8 straight.
I got to bounce, guys. So
all right. Well, thanks for stopping in, Mike.
Thanks for having me on.
Yep.
All right. See ya.
Number 8, I had Stranger Things. Number 7, It's Always Sunny. Number 6, Westworld. And then I had a tie for number 5 between Barry on HBO and Shameless. Number 4, The Good Place. I don't know if everybody's been able to check that out, but that's a good one if you're just looking for something light. Number 3, Veep on HBO. With Dreyfus, and then number 2, Breaking Bad, and number 1, I had the best show of the decade was The Americans on FX. And if you haven't been able to check that out, definitely check that out, about a family. They were Russians and created a whole family to live in the United States and Washington D.C. and worked as spies for the Soviet government in the 1980s towards the end of the Cold War, which is absolutely, absolutely phenomenal. What do you got, Ethan?
So I got 3 honorable mentions, which don't qualify. The Office, obviously, which is a show that you can play no matter what. I've watched it probably 8-9 times, so no matter what, if I lay down and take a nap, I can still close my eyes and picture and know exactly what's going on. The Simpsons, which... it's crazy to think of a show that played all this decade and it doesn't qualify because it wasn't primarily in this decade. I think it started in 89.
30 years. Yeah.
And they've been running marathon for like all month, I think. And then my all-time favorite show, which is Scrubs. I believe it ended after 9 seasons in 2011, which I probably watched that beginning to end in probably 15 times. My actual top 5, I have a tie between Ballers on HBO with The Rock. If you haven't figured out, I'm a Rock fan. And Archer, which plays a lot of, later at night. That's more into the dirty humor, kind of like a Bob's Burger, but it gets in the animated stuff, but it's not so clean. My number 4 show is Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which is hilarious. I mean, it takes kind of a special humor to watch some shows that I watch, but super, super good. American Horror Story, number 3. Which took a while to get into, but still overall, I think a really good show. Breaking Bad, obviously, number 2. And then my number 1 show is The Walking Dead.
Really?
So
still? So this even after?
Yeah, it's really tough. Once cable cut them and you got behind, you have to – I mean, yeah, I think so. I've dedicated too many hours to that show. I think it got kind of slow and – not as enjoyable.
I watched the
watch.
First few seasons of that and really liked it, and then it just kind of dragged on a little bit.
It's definitely gone downhill, and that's I could rant about that for a long time, and I'm not going to get into it. But I think overall, if there was a point system, I think it would win in my top 5. And then The Following, which had Kevin Bacon, which you've never seen apparently.
I haven't.
It ran, I believe, in 2012 to 2014, I think, for 3 seasons. It followed Edgar Allan Poe, kind of that background with The Raven. Sort of. So kind of a darker psychological show.
All right. Well, that's good. We'll cut away here and then we'll come right back with our final bold predictions for the next decade. All right. So our wrap up here on episode 6, maybe next year with our bold predictions. We're not going to just do our bold predictions for the next week like we normally do. We're going to do bold predictions for the next 10 years, for the 2020s for Minnesota sports. Why don't I let you go first, Ethan? I think you might have had a similar mind.
You know, I kind of went back and forth on what I wanted to do, and then we kind of talked, and I think we kind of were going to throw the same thing out there. I think I'm going to end up going with the Wild making at least 2 NHL championship series appearances, and they're going to win at least one of them in the next 10 years.
That's not a bad prediction. I think I was I was going through the 4 major sports teams. I think if I were to say something like, "Oh, the Lynx are going to win," that's a little bit harder to read or register. The Wolves aren't going to win an NBA title in the next 10 years. That's not the way the NBA works, and the Minnesota's not going to pull big names there that it takes to win an NBA title. I don't at this point sadly see the Twins winning a World Series in the next 10 years. Not to say that, 4 or 5 years down the road, there might not be some big moves or some, arms that come up that put them in contention. But until you have, some really dominant arms, it's going to be hard to compete with what's coming, with the Yankees and things like that. And the Wild, since you took it, I think that that's probably a decent prediction just because the NHL is probably the most wide open. If you can sneak into the playoffs, which 8 teams do, all it takes is a really hot goalie, and you've seen that in the past. It's the only sport really where 8 seeds stand a chance.
Yep.
So that's probably not a bad prediction. My prediction though will be that the Vikings will make at least one Super Bowl in the next 10 years. I do not foresee them at this point winning one, but things change a lot obviously in the NFL. So that'll be my bold prediction, that in the next 10 years, the Vikings will make the Super Bowl for the first time since 1978 or 79. One of those two. All right, so that's our show for the week. Thanks for checking us out. Be sure to get after us at Spotify and catch up on our first 5 episodes if you haven't done that already. Thanks again to Mike for joining us and talking with us. Our plan is for the next episode is to try and get one out a day or two before the Vikings' first playoff game, which could be next Saturday. The game could be next Saturday, so we'd look at possibly next Friday. And if they go to Sunday, maybe Saturday. But that's kind of what we're shooting for, is a day or so before the Vikings' first playoff game. So, as always, Ethan, thanks.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll have a good week, and we'll see everybody next time.